Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
So glad you can be with us for this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We are continuing our look at a fascinating book titled Mormon Enigma, Emma Hale Smith, written by two Mormon authors, Linda King Newell and Valene Tippetts Avery. And as we've been mentioning, this is a history of the early days of Mormonism, but focusing primarily on its effects on Joseph Smith's wife, Emma Hale Smith. And so far, we've been looking at quite a few aspects that I think, wouldn't you agree, Eric, that probably a lot of Mormons don't think about. Oftentimes, the focus, the spotlight, is on Joseph Smith, but not so much is really talked about when it comes to Emma Smith. So, So when I first read this book several years ago, I was fascinated at the angle the authors took to give you the perspective of early Mormon history through the eyes of Emma Smith. And I had to conclude that she certainly went through an awful lot. And the portion that we're going to discuss today is, of course, the stigma that Emma Smith had to live under being married to Joseph Smith. Because as you can imagine, Joseph Smith and the claims that he made, and they were pretty outlandish claims, claiming to be a Latter-day prophet of God, claiming to have been visited by an angel that told him about gold plates, that naturally would bring a lot of criticism from the locals. And Emma, being married to Joseph Smith, is going to take the brunt of that as well. It's just like how our wives feel when we are publicly criticized for what we do in ministry. Naturally, our wives don't like to hear some of the things that people who disagree with us have to say about us. And so you can understand the kind of pain that Emma probably went through hearing the things that were being said about her husband. But what we're going to talk about today is not just what was being said in the general public, but actually we're going to go back because they mention Isaac Hale, who was Emma Smith's father, who, as we mentioned last week, did not have a lot of good things to say about Joseph Smith. So we get into the part where a man by the name of Dr. Philastus Hurlbut comes on the scene, the source of a lot of criticism against Joseph Smith and his entire movement, the Mormon movement.
Dr. Philastus Hurlbut established himself as a physician, but his name doctor came from his parents in the superstitious belief that in the seventh son, he possessed supernatural powers. Hurlbut went on a mission, but the church disfellowshipped him for using obscenity to a young girl. When Joseph allowed him a hearing, he confessed, was reestablished, then boasted that he had outsmarted Joseph Smith's God. The council cut him off from the church.
Now, they cut him off from the church, so he leaves the church after being disciplined or excommunicated, and it says in the next paragraph that he declared himself an enemy of the Mormons and went back to the Palmyra and Harmony areas. This is Palmyra, New York. And Harmony, it was where Isaac Hale had lived in Harmony, Pennsylvania. This is where Emma Hale was actually raised in that area. And it says that he located about 100 residents willing to sign statements against the Smiths. Joseph read the publicized statements and denounced them as the efforts of Satan, which is a very typical thing that many charismatic leaders will often do when they are criticized by outsiders. They will certainly try to attribute it to being the work of Satan.
Now, it's amazing that he was able to round up 100 residents willing to sign these statements against the Smiths. These are not huge cities.
No, these are actually rural communities. So to be able to find that many people, you're right. I mean, that's a lot of people.
Now, 50 in each town even. I mean, 50 is your whole neighborhood, you know, the whole surrounding area there, the farms and everything else. I think that's a sizable number.
Now, a Mormon could argue, well, maybe there were a lot of people who just had an axe to grind against the Smiths. Well, okay, if you could demonstrate that, that would be put into the mix as far as trying to draw a conclusion on this. A lot of people who have an axe to grind, you have to ask, well, why would they have an axe to grind? What was it about this family that caused people to want to sign a statement?
And that would be people, I would think, in the surrounding area, because they didn't have communications like phones or internet or anything like that. So these are people who would have known this family, dozens of people who don't like them.
Now it says here in the next line, in return, Hurlbut publicly threatened Joseph's life. This sentence comes after he denounces what Hurlbut had said and called it an effort of Satan. Hurlbut publicly threatens Joseph Smith's life. And then Hurlbut comes in contact with a man by the name of Eber D. Howe, who was the editor of the Painesville Telegraph. And he sells his research, the signed affidavits, to this man, E.D. Howe. He includes in there these affidavits in a book that eventually comes out called Mormonism Unveiled. And the way it's known is that unveiled is misspelled. It's UNVAILED instead of EILED. But it mentions here in the book that Howe's book included the denunciation by Isaac Hale that was printed in the Susquehanna Register on May 1st, 1834. And it says that he had given Howe permission to use it. Hale reiterated his view that Joseph Smith did not keep his promise to avoid peepstones and work on his farm. Now, last week we read through that affidavit, and I think it would be good just to reemphasize some of the things that Isaac Hale had to say in that.
He says, I conscientiously believe that the whole Book of Mormon, so-called, is a silly fabrication of falsehood and wickedness, got up for speculation, and with design to dupe the credulous and unwary, and in order that its fabricators may live upon the spoils of those shallow deception, he stated. When Howe published his collection as Mormonism Unveiled, he included Isaac's judgment. The book opened old wounds for Emma. Circulation of the denunciation from Joseph's father-in-law had great impact on those unfamiliar with the previous struggle between the two men. No doubt existed in Emma's mind that her father considered her duped.
Now let's try to look at this from Emma's point of view. She has to bear the brunt of the criticism not only from Joseph Smith, so she has to live with that as his spouse. But now this is coming out again. I mean, her father had already made this statement, and it went public in the Susquehanna Register. Mm-hmm. That must have been hard enough for her to have to live through, that her father certainly did not think that his son-in-law, her husband, was a man of credible character. But now it's going to start all over again. And now it's being done in the new neighborhood where she lives. Yeah. And now this is starting to spread even more than it was before. So I can only imagine the pain that she's probably having to go through at this time. And it had to have been serious. Now, we go on in the book where it talks about, while Hurlbut stirred up animosities in Kirtland, life became increasingly difficult for the saints in Missouri. Tensions had been building there for some time that would affect Emma and the church, as President Andrew Jackson's policies expelled Indians from their ancestral lands along the Ohio River. They moved through Missouri to the high arid plains beyond the Mississippi. To the original settlers, these Indians were savages crossing their land. The Mormons, on the other hand, saw part of the literal gathering of Israel in the western migration of the Indians and felt free to befriend them. W.W. Phelps, in his enthusiastic editorials in the Mormon newspaper, the Evening and Morning Star, concerning the religious implications of the gathering Indians, only fueled the settlers' growing anger. Now, it could be argued that this is more of a political type of disagreement, mm-hmm. though it's actually, you can't escape the fact that their politics, the Mormons' politics, would be governed by their religious feelings. And so they look at this situation of the Indians in that area as a positive thing, whereas, of course, the locals probably would not share that particular view. This is going to cause some tension, naturally, between the locals and the Mormons.
Mm-hmm.
So we're finding now that these tensions are going to start to grow, and not only do we have problems with the view regarding the Native Americans that live in the area, but it also has to do with slavery. And that cannot be overlooked, because we know from the demographics that Missouri, because of the Missouri Compromise, was entered into the Union as a slave state, but the Missouri Compromise of 1820 is what kind of decided all that. It eventually became a state in 1821. There are Southern politics going on in Missouri. The Mormons don't have Southern politics. The Mormons are coming from Northern states. And it's not that there was not Southern sympathies in Northern states like Illinois, but at the same point, Illinois, during the Civil War, was naturally on the side of the Union. But there's Southern politics that are going on in Missouri, and Joseph Smith is coming in with all these people, some of them immigrants from Canada, and they're bringing their Northern politics with them, and this is going to cause a lot of strain as well between the Mormons and the locals. So if you want to think, and many Mormons do, that a lot of the persecution that was faced by Latter-day Saints going into Missouri were merely over their religion, that's not exactly true. Not to say that their religion didn't guide some of their politics, but a lot of it was political.
Yeah.
The people in the South were upset that a lot of these people were coming in with their Northern ideas, and they knew that if they had enough of them come into their area, they could actually change the local politics. And well, so they wanted to put a stop to that.
I think it's a great point you're making. And New York, then they went to Ohio, mm-hmm. both Northern states. Now all of a sudden you are here, and I think the mixture of things you're talking about did create all kinds of angst among the people.
Well, when you have in the bottom paragraph on page 48, it says some Missouri citizens had come from the South and brought slaves with them. They passed laws designed to keep free blacks out of the state. When free black members of the church tried to gather in quote-unquote Zion with the other saints, white authorities refused them entry across the border unless they could prove citizenship in another state. Phelps, who's the editor of the local paper, writes an editorial on this. And he includes a statement about this where he says, as to slaves, we have nothing to say in connection with the wonderful events of this age. Much is doing towards abolishing slavery and colonizing the blacks in Africa. And then they say, the authors say, anti-Mormon sentiment exploded. And we're going to pick up on that tomorrow.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. You just listened to today's broadcast of Viewpoint on Mormonism. But did you know that you can hear previous shows at your convenience? The Viewpoint on Mormonism podcast is free on the internet and will help you learn more about the LDS religion. Feel free to listen on your computer or download to your favorite listening device. Just go to mrm.org and click on the right side where it says On Air. All of our shows are here, so visit mrm.org today. At Mormonism Research Ministry, we're committed to equipping Christian believers to effectively share their faith with their Mormon friends and loved ones. That's why we produce Viewpoint on Mormonism, as well as operate our website, mrm.org, where you can find a wealth of information on this topic. We also have books and downloadable MP3s available online. In addition, we invite you to join in on the conversation at our blog site called Mormon Coffee. We want to be your resource for helping you better share the Christian faith.